listening to ThePorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast podcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. And OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Latitude Financial Group, which provides financial planning and investment strategies so you can start saving money and begin lowering taxes. And finally, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs. And now, the Porchcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 47 of the Porchcast. We are broadcasting from a very special weekend. We're up here in Breckenridge for the Big Beers, Belgians, and Barley Wine Festival. I'm with Sam Sly, our engineer. Sam, how are we doing on the ones and twos?
They are one-ing and two-ing very well.
Yeah, fantastic. And also, we're really excited to be joined by two really tremendous men in the beer industry. We've got Neil Fisher from Weldworks Brewing, Matt Brindelson from Firestone Walker. Gentlemen, how's it going?
It's good.
How's your weekend going?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. All right.
Having a good time.
And walking on in, we've got Hunter Grondin, who's...
Look at that, showing at the last minute.
Yeah, there's a huge line.
You get to sit in the middle, buddy.
Huge line for gin and soda.
Cocktail in
hand.
That's
Neil. How are you going, Matt? Good to meet you. Yeah. Sorry, I'm late. I didn't have my phone with me with charging.
It's all good. Classic Hunter strolling in 10 minutes late. No. We're really excited. There we go. We've got some fans drinking some Weldworks.
Look at that. They know who's going on here.
Well, guys, we're really excited. This is one of our favorite weekends of the year. The Big Beers, Belgians, and Barley Wines Festival is one of the premier events in the country. For those who aren't familiar, based for 17 years up in Vail, last year moved to Breckenridge. Tremendous event put on by Laura and Bill Lodge, and they've made this one of the premier beer events in the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I know, Neil, we're going to start out with you and the Weldworks team. Big Beers holds some special meaning for you guys. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And
yeah, so before we opened Weldworks, before Weldworks was even really a glimmer in our eye, it was a group of us that came up here pretty regularly, I think maybe 4 or 5 years in a row, just as homebrewers and beer enthusiasts, and it's always been an awesome festival from that aspect. We love coming and attending, and that's kind of where Colin and I, my partner now, really got to know each other and kind of got to really connect more, because we're both in Greeley, but we never really got to connect outside of, brewing in the garage. So, the first few years we did it, just an awesome experience. But the last year we did it before opening Weldworks, we had entered the homebrew competition and ended up taking 3 medals of that. And that kind of is what prompted Colin to approach me and say, hey, I think we can maybe make this work. So
it was kind of a push of validation, saying, stuff is good enough.
Yeah, it was the first major homebrew competition we'd entered. And so, not that all of that's necessarily a formula for success in the craft beer, professional industry, but that's why we love this festival for a lot of reasons, but for both Colin and I, it's kind of special because it's kind of where the dream kind of went from just kind of this ethereal, maybe never happening, to, I don't know, maybe we could pull this off.
So, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually when we first met.
I believe so.
Probably, I think, 3 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Big Beers brought us all together as well. Now, you all, because of that connection, you all always bring the house when it comes to Big Beers.
Yeah.
You're pouring how many beers this year?
We brought 12.
12 beers pouring at the festival this year. That's insane.
Yeah, we've been kind of upping our festival game a little bit. We brought a bunch of stuff to some other fests out of the state, and so we realized this is one of our, between GABF and this, probably two of our biggest festivals in Colorado. So we're not doing drafts, so it made it a little easier to bring a bunch of cans and bottles.
You just have an entire row of turkey boxes.
Yeah, we have three cars full of cases and just mixed beers, but three different barrel-aged beers, 4 kind of bigger Imperial Stouts, our Achromatic series, a couple IPAs, a couple our Grisette we just released. So yeah, we're excited. It should be fun tomorrow.
Now, it's been a big year for Weldworks. I want to talk a little bit about some of the big releases you all came out with this year. We started with Peach Climacteric back in April. Also had Media Noche Reserve and Vanilla Media Noche. You all also switched to, you all started canning a little bit more. Your distribution is a lot larger. Tell us about, what this year has meant to you guys.
It's been a great year. We've grown a lot more than we planned, and I think we did it in a lot of the right ways, though. We didn't overextend ourselves. We didn't run out of beer in the tap room. We kind of prioritized the tap room and then worked down from that. And then we started kind of diversifying our approach. Instead of just, you know, kind of juicy bits especially, we continued to keep that one on, but rather than just doing the derivatives of it, we started kind of moving in all sorts of directions with it, all different, you know, fruited styles of New England style IPAs, session IPA, double IPA. And then kind of about 6 months ago, we kind of even took a further turn with the pastry stouts, and we're definitely on the gimmick train. I'm sure people, if you call Weldworks gimmicky, you wouldn't be completely wrong, but we do it with an air of intentionality as well. So sure. If we add Cocoa Puffs and maple syrup to a beer, we want it to taste like Cocoa Puffs and maple syrup in a beer. I think that's probably what excited us the most this past year, was just kind of changing a little bit of our strategy and going forward with whatever style we want to do, and not just kind of trying to make it work within a production. So, you know, I think we introduced about 20 new beers in the last quarter of 2017.
That's a lot.
We have 100 new SKUs planned for 2018. So,
wow.
But they're all going to be a lot of them one-offs, a lot of them just in taproom, maybe a few hit distro, but a couple we're going back to basics. Just start with the Grisette. We're going to kind of go forward with some more lagers. We know they're not going to be the sexiest beers. They're not going to be the juicy bits or pastry stouts that you know people show up for, but it's the ones that we're passionate about. In the meantime, we're going to kind of learn what we like and what we want to pursue more.
Yeah, so continue that road of exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the barrel program that you touched on too. So we had the releases. We've also learned a lot from those. We had some issues in Medianoche Reserve, which is a real bummer. It was also kind of a huge lift to win a gold at GABF this year with the strong and barrel-aged stout category. So probably if I could pick one category to win a medal with, not just gold, but any medal, that would be it for us, just because we're so passionate about barrel-aged stouts. And Medianoche is, you know, one that we've really put a lot of kind of our growth into as far as the barrel program, starting with that. We'll starting to look at barley wines and some other stouts and other things, but that's kind of where we started with. So as much as the, you know, difficulties with the bottle releases as we've had, which we've the Medianoche Reserve and now the Vanilla, we've got a claim form online that we, you know, basically if anyone had an off bottle, we're replacing it with a different bottle that's guaranteed to not have issues. So that was a lot of learning for us. So it was definitely some ups and downs this year, but I think ultimately we've learned now that we're going to focus always on quality, but now we can really just go forward with innovation. And some of them are going to be great. Some of them are going to be things that people scratch their heads about, like Cocoa Puffs and maple syrup with microphone. But it's a fun beer too. So.
Now, you touched a little bit about, you know, some of the steps moving forward. I know that you all are going to do, you announced some more intensive testing methods. Can you tell us a little bit about that to ensure that, beer is a living and breathing organism, so infection is always at risk. But you talked a little bit about, growing your kind of testing.
Yeah, I think that was the main issue I think we had. To be honest, we probably needed to scale back on those bottles until we had a fully implemented QA/QC, which we have a lot of that, but we didn't have, you know, PCR. We were doing plating, which was not giving us the results we wanted. Some of them were, you know, coming back clean, and turned out they weren't. So we've kind of totally, with the help of some other breweries, and especially the bigger breweries with New Belgium, Avery, Odell, a bunch of the guys here in Colorado have been really awesome to be able to reach out to and find out the best ways to make sure those beers are good, and if not, figure out how to improve them in the future. But we're going to just PCR test everything that's going to go into bottles, and then eventually we'll have our own PCR testing in-house. For now, we're outsourcing it, but that's kind of a total shift that we've done now, and so it might mean that we have to take a few months off until we figure out, you know, the way we can. Yeah, I think the other thing we're finding is Medianoche, the one that took the medal in the bottle we released, was totally clean. It was the adjuncts, and so how do you handle a 25-pound per barrel toasted coconut addition? That's where we had the issues. And then we scaled that up to 50 pounds per barrel. And those kinds of adjunct levels, I think, are increasing our risk. On top of that, we've got the higher gravity finish. So, you know, Medianoche has gone from kind of high 28 Plato beer to now 33, 34 Plato. Sure. Starting gravity, it's still finishing at 10 to 12, sometimes 13 Plato. There's a lot of residual sugars there. So we run a lot of risks in the barrel program. We know we're not oblivious to that. So I think just knowing how to mitigate those risks as much as possible without compromising a lot of the approach that we want to take with those beers. And ultimately, it might come back around that there's certain adjuncts we can't, you know, package. You know, coconut's one that we're still trying to tackle, but we're figuring out what does work and what doesn't, and I think this next year, maybe a little bit longer before our next Medianoche release, but we've also kind of committed to putting Medianoche on draft in the tap room as long as possible, almost year-round if we could. So a lot of single barrel variants, just experimenting with stuff, leave it on for a couple weeks, put the next one on a couple weeks later.
Nice. Really neat.
Nice. Well thought out. I've been planning much in 2017.
Don't lose that notebook.
Yeah, don't lose that. Exactly. The one right here. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, some of those aren't in the works yet.
Now, speaking of kind of what people can expect moving forward, what can people see, expect to see from WeldWorks in 2018?
So like I mentioned, we're going to focus a lot more on the stuff we're doing with in-house cans, the 16-ounce 4-packs. We've kind of moved in a different direction with that as well. We're doing more weekly releases instead of every 2 or 3 weeks, which means some SKUs will stick around for a bit longer, some will go out quicker, but kind of two to three new beers every week is our goal, and we'll see how quickly we get to that goal. It's been about two a week on the last 8 to 10 weeks, so that's a big focus for us. And then we're also going to be hosting that Invitational in June, which is a big, really kind of started because of the DoubleTree Hotel that opened up just 3 blocks from us. And our biggest mission at WeldWorks is to try and, you know, invest in our community and be a part of change and really restoring a lot of pride to Greeley. As you guys know, in Colorado, Greeley's, you know, always the butt of the butt of everybody's jokes. It's fun to see. It's fun to see where we're at. You know, 3 years.
What's that smell? Slaughter.
It's Greeley. Greeley gets blamed for all the smells, but. But yeah, so for us it was a really cool, you know, opportunity to showcase what's happening in Greeley, bring some people into Greeley. So that's another big focus for us.
Which you have, I'm not gonna lie. People come to Denver, stay at my house. My roommate, sister came over. I said, "What are you guys doing?" She said, "Well, since Celine's moved here, she's never been to WeldWorks, and they were just headed up to Greeley."
That's awesome.
I was like, "That didn't used to happen."
Yeah,
it's cool because really, the community has evolved and changed, and you know, arts have become a big focus here too. And so it's really cool that you all are able to help showcase that in a bigger way.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, even just getting invested with other nonprofits, and I think for us that's more important than even some of the other things we have. Even the beer itself, like, we love making beer, but if you were to ask us what's our primary focus for WeldWorks, it's our employees and our community. So, you know, that's been playing out a lot of different ways between the festival, between just these, even the releases, you know, some of these bigger Acromatic releases that, you know, the last 3 or 4 have brought a couple thousand people, like, you know, over 1,000 people to a brewery in a day, which, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's just cool to see people kind of, they're not that it's going to change overnight how people talk about Greeley, but for the first, you know, 6 months we were open, it was always this, we got to drive to Greeley. And now it's like people don't even mention it anymore. Maybe they don't want to come, but they still come, so I'll take them however they get there.
When I think of Greeley, I do think of you guys now, Wiley Roots. I think of, like, Crabtree, Crabtree, and the, what the other brewery?
Broken Plow, and then Green Planet just
there's another
up.
Brewery I'm totally spacing on. Maybe
Bricks.
But yeah, I think I'm starting to think about the brewery community that's popping up there, which is really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really before, truly, being born and raised in Colorado and up north, was just thought of, like, slaughterhouses.
Yep.
Yeah, and the UNC nursing school and teaching school. Yeah. So that's really had. And there's so many awesome breweries.
There's so many cool things happening downtown, and we're showcasing that. The festival's going to be a mix of all that. So our Go Cup district was the first in the state with kind of a common consumption area. So it's going to be cool. We're going to host some tap takeovers at Patrick's that weekend before the fest, have live music out on the plaza. Take your beer out on the plaza. So just some cool things that people don't know is happening in Greeley we're hoping to showcase.
Yeah. And for those who aren't familiar, when is the WeldWorks Invitational going to take place?
So June 23rd. Tickets, I think we're hoping to go on sale before the end of this month. So can look out for those. And I think we've got a lot to learn, a lot to do, but we're pretty excited about what's coming up. So.
While many of you out there are stowing away bottles of bourbon barrel-aged stouts, lambics, and other wilds, it's equally important to stow some money away for a rainy day. Saving money and paying off debts are two of the biggest New Year's resolutions, so do it the smart way. Go to latitudefinancial.com, start saving money and lowering your taxes today. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting now. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com. Made by Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com.
Now we're going to transition over and invite our other guest, Matt Brindelson, to the show. You know, in a similar vein, I think, you know, where Firestone Walker is based is probably more so associated with wine country. And you all have done a lot to shift that perception as well. Tell us a little bit about, I know that from your all's humble beginnings with you starting out as a hop chemist, moving on to the Siebel Institute, and then going on to Goose Island, and eventually you joined the slow brewing team, which eventually became Firestone Walker after they acquired Slow Brewing. So take me through that journey and I guess how you got into beer and where you are today.
Well, I mean, similar story. It was homebrewing,
yeah,
quite honestly, and it was a few years prior, so the world was different.
Yeah.
So the homebrewing was very basic, but I did my college years in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Bell's Brewing Company, who's here at this event, was alive and well. Larry started that company in the early 80s, and I finished high school in the late 80s, so there you go, and was homebrewing by the early 90s. But Larry had a homebrew shop. All of his brewers were home brewers outside of working at the brewery. And quite honestly, Bell's in those days was just an oversized home brewery. I mean, it was very basic and very open. And it was a really cool time for me to learn about brewing and get stoked. My first craft brew experience was tasting a Bell's Porter. I've told that story many times, but and it's still one of my favorite beers today. I think the stouts and the porters that come out of Bell's are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was blessed to, come of age in the craft world in a place where there was an amazing brewery. And I think, you know, back to your story in Colorado here, I mean, you're going to inspire a lot of people. It's not like there aren't a lot of breweries already in Colorado, but locally, I think that's really important. And that happened to me, so that's kind of my story.
Yeah.
Roll the clocks forward. You were talking about wine country. That was also an inspirational moment for me to come from the Midwest. That was very beer focused, very not wine focused. My father owned a restaurant, and obviously there was always wine around. But when push came to shove, Minnesotans sat down and drank beer. You know, that's what they did, and that's how I grew up. Moving to California and immersing myself in wine country, and you know, now most of my local friends are winemakers. My kids go to school with the winemakers' kids, and it's just part of our everyday culture. That's obviously had a huge influence on Firestone and the beers we make.
Sure.
The family are winemakers. Adam Firestone's a third generation winemaker. Mm-hmm. David Walker has 50 acres of grapes at his place, so it's part of our kind of existence in the Central Coast.
Now, I think you joined the Firestone team, was it back in 2001?
Yep.
And back then it was a much different operation. You know, I know from the history of it, I understand the Firestones utilize this kind of antique system. Tell us a little bit about that and what it was like to brew on that system.
Well, I think you're referring to the union.
The union.
And
this method of.
I mean, it's antique, but in many ways, really all the Firestone Union is using a wine barrel as a primary fermentation vessel, which today sounds, you know, blasé. It's like every brewery you visit has a barrel. However, in 1996, when these guys fired up the brewery, these are winemakers thinking about making craft brew and also thinking about how they're going to differentiate themselves from the craft breweries that already existed in our neighborhood. And the landscape was Anchor Brewery up north, you know, Sierra Nevada a little bit further up north. You know, how are they going to not necessarily compete, but just
do something different,
yeah. Right. And using barrels was very natural for these winemakers.
Was it a tough transition for you and Jim Crooks that were already?
Yeah, and you know, I tell the story a lot. But when I sat down for my interview with Adam and David and they told me about, you know, the Firestone Union and how important that was to the, I kind of rolled my eyes and they're looking at me like, what, you know? And, you know, I'm like, well, right. I mean, smoke and mirrors, that's your marketing piece, but you don't really make beer that way. And they're like, yes, that's how we make it. It's non-negotiable. And sure enough, visiting the brewery, that's how they made their beer every day. And it's still a part of how we make beer, especially double barrel ale in our brewery. So, you know, for them, that was just second nature.
Yeah.
You know, how
they had this vision and they were going to stick to it.
Yeah, and I appreciate it more now maybe than I even did then, the fact that they just knew how to care for a barrel. They knew how long after it was cleaned it needed to be sulfured again. You know, that keeping a barrel wet and happy and full all the time is the only way to keep a barrel. And so when you talk to them about instability, they're like, well, just manage it correctly. You know, there was kind of common sense for them. And so that was, again, I felt blessed to walk into that situation, and it's, you know, been a huge influence on my brewing.
Now, it's interesting to me because, you know, so much focus and emphasis has been put on the barrel system and union, but as I understand, I believe it was Jeffers Richardson who kind of mentioned that you all have been wanting to play with, you know, the sour and wild side of things for a long time, but it took a little while to convince the Walker Brothers a little bit to really jump into that. Is that kind of true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Adam Firestone especially was you know, very steadfast that the brewery that he started was going to make very few beers very well.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to chase trends. We weren't going to try to be, you know, a flashy brewery. And in fact, it wasn't until I came on board that they started participating in things like GABF and Craft Brewers Conference and things like that. It wasn't that they didn't, you know, respect the rest of the community, but they were very insular in the idea that the beers that they made were going to be consumed locally. It was mostly amongst the wine community and the Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo community. The idea that we needed to travel across the country to commune with other brewers or try to promote our products, more importantly, was like, don't worry about it, you know. We're always just going to be in California, probably in Central California. Hopefully you're okay with that. And
time for change.
That's what we're going to do. And so when I would say, you know, we need to make an IPA, and they're like, we're fine. Nobody in the Central Coast needs an IPA. We have double barrel ale.
Was, you know, it 10 years before you all finally brewed like a hobby?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and if you look at it, I came from Goose Island, where IPA was a major seller for us by the time I left. I was very proud of that recipe, and now it's, you know, Goose Island's best-selling beer. So I kept, you know, we'd have these, you know, these meetings about what we were going to do in the new year, and I'm like, what about IPA? And they're like, not yet. I'm like, oh, all right, fine. You know, we have pale ale.
Almost in a world where Union Jack never came into existence. I don't know if we'd be making any IPAs that are worth anything now for Union Jack and everything since then.
I mean, it seems absolutely ridiculous today, but in those days, you know, we had a really good thing going with double barrel ale. And I think there was also a respect for the other breweries in the community. You know, there was Liberty Ale, there was Celebration. I mean, there were a lot of great hoppy beers already in California. So our shtick was barrel fermented ales.
Wow. That's insane. And I mean, it's been very successful in your growth. I believe you all have won 5 mid-sized brewing companies of the year in the past however many years you've been with the company. And over the past 5 years, I think you all have taken home 13 individual medals at GABF.
I try not to keep score.
Life goals for the rest of us.
I think you all figured it out. But it really was kind of around that 10th anniversary that you all first started doing these blends for your anniversary beer. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. And that's essentially the genesis of the barrel aging program at Firestone. Mm-hmm. Another part of it is that we were already barrel fermenting, and both Adam and David thought it would confuse people if we started having to talk about barrel fermentation barrel aging. In fact, you know, if you did a tour of Firestone back in those days, we would make a point of saying, yeah, I know you see barrels at other breweries, but they're not doing primary fermentation in those barrels, they're barrel aging, and we really try to differentiate ourselves by that. Mm-hmm. And there's a funny story that when I started this program, I started with bourbon barrels, and Adam would see those barrels and they look hideous compared to his beautiful wine barrels back at the winery. And so he'd pretty much wait for me to go somewhere, like go out of town, and then he'd poke Miguel, you know, our warehouse guy, and be like, hey, Miguel, can you pick up those and send them over by the garbage can? Like, you know, they're disgusting looking. And I'd come home and my barrels would have been moved. And then when we started doing sour stuff later on, he really freaked out. He was like, this does not belong here. And we had to start hiding the barrels around the brewery just to kind of keep the program going. But it was the 10th anniversary that really launched it. I think once that beer you know, went out in the world and we saw the positive response, that convinced Adam and David that it's okay to continue forward. And yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
That's really cool. Now, you all have also had a really huge year. Big expansion at the Paso Robles location, and also a new kind of, I think Eric Ponce joined your team earlier this year to kind of take over the barrel aging program. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I've always had great respect for Eric, and
also originally from spent some time at Goose Island as well.
Absolutely, not while I was there, but yeah. I certainly visited him while he was at Goose and was so impressed with what he was doing, both creatively and just in scale. You know, that barrel program is pretty impressive. Yeah, and then, you know, he knocked on the door and said, you know, is there an opportunity? And I'm like, hell yeah. So, you know, I've handed the vintage barrel program over to Eric, and he's doing wonderful things with it. I mean, this past year we did some, you know, kind of single, you know, not single barrel releases, I guess, variants on things that we were already doing.
More specialty releases, like Java, I think.
Yeah, and it's nice. You know, I think for, you know, the better part of 17, 18 years, I've been kind of the creative force of everything that Firestone has been doing. And it's so nice to have fresh blood and, you know, fresh eyes and ears on this thing. Dark and Stormy is a beer that recently came out, and it's a riff on that cocktail. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of ginger and lime peel in a rum barrel-aged Eldorado, so it really works. He did a Scotch Parabola, yeah. and he brought in some Islay Scotch barrels that were just insanely peaty. And after 3 months, we tasted the beer and we're like, oh man, this needs to come out of the barrel. This doesn't make sense. And then we thought about it. Should we blend it down? Should we not? And we're like, either go big or go home. And he launched that as Scotch Parabola. And he's got a few other things cooking in the incubator. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And then he's also helping with production management and organization of the Barrel Works program, because he also has, you know, an eye for sour beer program and that. So yeah, it's been a huge addition to the team.
Cool. Really neat. Now, I want to take a second first, real quick, what else can we, what's on the horizon for Firestone Walker? What can people expect in 2018?
You know, it's both sides of the coin. I mean, we do have Eric conjuring up new barrel-aged interesting things. You know, I've always been the, I don't want to say anti, but, you know, I've never been kind of spice or fruit or adjunct forward. I've been a pretty much a purist through my, you know, brewing career thus far. So he'll conjure up some things on that side. On the other side, we're launching Firestone Lager, relaunching it, really. I mean, Firestone Lager left when Union Jack came in, so that was about 2006 is when that left the program, and it's coming back, and it just seems like the right time for lager to come back in. It's a Munich Helles by style. You know, we always put a little Firestone twist on it, so that's coming in. We started doing nitro cans. I don't have one here, I guess, but
Velvet Merlin.
Yeah, so we're doing nitro Velvet Merlin. I'm pretty stoked about that beer. I did some nitrogenation of beer back in the Goose Island days, and we've done draft nitro beers at Firestone for a long time, but putting in a can was something new, and so that's exciting from just technology and yeah. I'm not going to make 100 new beers this year.
I don't know if we will, but that's our goal.
But it is cool to see kind of the parallels there of, you know, you talked about doing a little bit more with lagers and kind of getting back into, like, a grisette. You talked about reintroducing the Firestone lager. That's really neat. I know Hunter likes to...
I think at some level, it's a reflection of what's going on in the business these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in some ways, at least in our local market, we're the 800-pound gorilla, we're the larger brewery, and, you know, we're kind of seen as maybe not being as nimble, and I think in some ways we feel like, no, we are, we're just as creative, and maybe we can't go to those same lengths as 100 new beers, but beer consumers today are very keyed in on fresh beer, and that's where these, you know, these beautiful juicy hazy IPAs come into play. Mm-hmm. They're very you know, attention deficit. They want something new on a regular basis. And I think it's the brewer's job to be a reflection of that, or at least react to that in a positive way. I don't think you should just throw, you know, shit at the wall, excuse my French, but I think it's important to listen and react and do what you can to, you know, play to your fans.
I've always been extremely impressed with the way you guys kind of have this creative destruction mentality of, like, you know, amazing beers like Wookiee Jack. You know, it it's got to be hard to take a SKU like that that was so near and dear to so many people, or any other ones you guys have kind of moved out to bring something new in. Meanwhile, we see other, you know, larger breweries that just resist that. So I've always appreciated, you know, even at your guys' scale, you're still willing to, you know, like you said, not necessarily just try everything, but kind of adapt and maneuver around. I don't know that there's a more agile brewery you guys' size that can, you know, with the Leo vs. Ursus stuff that came out and the Luponic Distortion. I mean, it, you know, you guys are, we see a lot of breweries that get to that size and kind of, I don't know, not stop innovating, but they stop kind of pushing the envelope. They stop even really listening to what, you know, craft beer consumers want. I think you guys do an excellent job with that, like very well.
Well, and it's not just Firestone. I think there's a lot of breweries out there, large and small. And as long as the brewer and the people who are making the beer and the people who are responsible for delivering the beer to the beer lovers out there are beer lovers themselves, you know, if you're still stoked about beer, you're going to do the right thing.
Yep.
You know, and so, at the end of the day, you make what you want to drink. Mm-hmm. That's what's really important. And if you're not out there tasting everybody's beer, like I said, I was drinking your beer when I got to town. It was the first beer I had, man, Juicy Bits.
Oh,
and I was super stoked to drink it fresh, and it's inspiring. And I'll go home with that, and I'm not necessarily going to make that same beer, but, you know, I'll take that home.
So, speaking of brewers, our lead brewer, Allie, she walked by us a second ago. She walked through, she already left, but she was, like, cheesing super hard, and I waved and smiled at her because she's a huge fan of yours. She's been brewing. She's been, and she went to Siebel as well. She's been brewing for a long time.
But in Chicago for a little while.
Yeah, in Chicago, but just, like, loves Firestone and loves what you've been putting out. So I wanted to ask you if you would come by tomorrow and put her on the spot. Her and I don't get along all so well. In fact, it's true. We get along, but, like, I'm the guy that, like, yeah, I kind of fuck her day up all the time. Pardon my French. Yeah, so that would make her day if you came by. Just be like, hey, I heard you like Firestone. Just, like, mess with her a little bit. Like, I'm not kidding you. We love and hate each other so much. I swear last night, I think she put a hit out on me. I got T-bone crossing an intersection from our cabin. We're two blocks away, and I was leaving in our work van, and I did. I got T-bone last night, and Allie called. Like, I don't know. It was, like, an hour after it happened. I didn't answer it because I was dealing with the police and everything, and I jokingly turned everybody. I was like, I bet you she was calling to see if I was alive.
Did he make it?
Is he going to come back and ask me to transfer half barrels into Sixtals next week? Because it's starting to come, like, is he alive still? So, yeah, you might.
She wanted to know if she might eat the entire pizza.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she wanted to have the pizza and everything. So you could probably get me some points there.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm totally fine. It actually was a lot. It wasn't that bad.
You shook it off.
I shook it off. Yeah. Should see the other car, but yeah, no, it's fine.
talk about, you know, mutual.
I leaned into it.
Whether you're planning to build out a larger beer cellar, shopping for a new home, or buying a new car, OnTap Credit Union provides the tools and services needed to help with any major life transition. Learn how OnTap Credit Union can help with home loans and streamlining financing for a new car. OnTap Credit Union also specializes in crafting banking solutions for you, the people who brew great beer, people who drink it, and the communities where they all reside and do business. Find out more at ontapcu.org. All right, folks, we often talk about First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. They're the Pour Your Own Draft system located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. It's basically the adult version of Froyo. You can go in and try as much or as little as possible of up to 40 different styles of beer. It's your Pour Your Own Draft system, so you can pour a little bit or a lot. They've also got fantastic food. So visit First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. Pour Your Own Draft system located at 1309 26th Street here in Denver, Colorado. Once again, that's First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen.
Who are you all excited to try this weekend? I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at who else is pouring at this weekend's festival. Are there any breweries that you all are kind of had your eye on that you're wanting to
secrets.
Try something?
We need secrets here. Last year was American Solera for me. So the American Solera, you know, I can't remember the head brewer there.
Chase.
Chase. Yeah. It was his kind of his like debut beers in Colorado. And I laughed because I went over there and tried beers, and they're phenomenal. But everyone was like walking around like who's this brewery, who's American Solera. So I started pointing people over there like those beers are amazing. So that was kind of the secret brewery for me last year.
I'll admit that for our Invitational, this is a really cool event. It's an opportunity to walk around the room and really, you know, well, I mean, a lot of beers that you're not going to taste. I may have this wrong. I don't know which year it was, but Side Project was one brewery that I got turned on to here. Mm-hmm. Big time. You know, but it's some of the tried and true that I don't get to taste fresh, or at least talk to the breweries, you know, just to network with the Odell's guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rupture is an awesome beer. Mm-hmm. You know, that's absolutely what I drank in the hot tub just a little while ago. It was awesome.
I'm about to go take that beer on tap right now. As
yeah,
a matter of fact.
It's beautiful.
we're getting three new beers out of the hotel bar, and she told me which three to take down versus style, and she was like, Rupture. I was like, ooh, shit. Like, if I could save some one thing about your draft lineup.
We love that beer.
Rupture's fantastic.
I mean,
I don't think I've looked at the full list yet. It's a pretty awesome list. I think Side Projects is always a one. Like, they don't show up at a lot of festivals. Corey's making some of the best beer in the country. So anytime, you know, Corey's got something on the list, it's like, you probably need to go. Yeah. And obviously Troy as well, like what, you know, Casey's doing.
He just walked by us too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was looking over here. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, everything they've been doing, I'm always excited to see their list because they kind of, you know, I've never had a bad beer at a festival from Casey, but they always bring an awesome list of stuff too. So I don't even know what they're bringing, but I'm almost certain if I stop by those two guys. And then, you know, Black Project, I know they brought Cat Sabbath, so I've heard rumors about this beer, so I'm excited to try it. Yeah, I can't wait to try that one. So there's just so many good breweries, and I think, like Matt said, I think it's my favorite part is just getting to connect with people and like you said, drink some of these beers fresh. And I hope, is Outer Range pouring? Is Lee pouring? Okay, so I didn't even get to stop by the brewery yet, but I think Lee's doing some of the coolest stuff right now too. So there's some really awesome Colorado beers that, you know, you come to this festival and you're like, oh, I should probably drink everything that's not in our market, but you just don't have that many opportunities to drink beer in your market.
Yeah,
so
I'll be heavily focused on Colorado beers for sure.
Yeah,
cool.
Really cool. Yeah. Well, we really want to thank you all for joining us on the show. I know it's a busy weekend, but we really enjoyed having you all on, and hopefully you all have a great rest of your Big Beers weekend.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cheers, you guys. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Once again, this has been episode 47 of the Porchcast. You can find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and all of those listening devices. Be sure to follow us. Give us a little like if you enjoy what you're listening to, and we'll catch you next time. This has been the Porchcast with Sam, Hunter, Tristan, and also a big thank you to Neil and Matt for joining us. We'll catch you next time. Check you later.
Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.